all of our predictions at the beginning of the war were correct. Didn't really take in the scale, I think, to a large degree. So we knew the fighting would start in Khartoum because we saw troops being brought into Khartoum. We knew that the fighting would spread to other parts of the country, particularly Darfur, which has been a restive region in the west of the country for decades now. And we knew that it would encompass all different parts of society, having started in the center. We also knew that a state collapse would be imminent because, again, the fighting started in Khartoum, in the capital, in the geographic and political center, and it spread to other parts of the country. But I don't think we necessarily realized the scale of the suffering that would take place, the humanitarian indicators that are showing just the most dire humanitarian conditions across the country, with parts of Darfur and Khartoum having some of the worst humanitarian indicators. The famine that is already upon us, even though international organizations and the UN failed to announce a famine, largely for political reasons. And all of this has happened in only 1 year. And because we know this conflict has the potential to last for many, many years, based on Sudan's historical trajectory, maybe even 20 years, it's almost unfathomable how much worse this could get in even the next 5 to 10 years, let alone 20. So certainly, I think a lot of things we could sort of predict, but I think the scale and the intensity of the violence and the spread of the conflict and the impact that it's had on the social fabric of Sudan, on the people's ability to function, on the state's ability to deliver services, that, I think, has surpassed many people's predictions.
If you say the conflict was predictable, how did we fail to prevent it? And what are the drivers that are sustaining violence now, 1 year later?
Well, I remember speaking to a variety of people before the war started, and I was warning them, along with many other people, that the numbers of troops we were seeing in Khartoum, and bearing in mind that Khartoum is a city within the part of the country, the central northern part of the country, that had been inoculated against conflict since Sudan's inception as an independent country in 1956, and had never really seen the violence that we saw in what is now South Sudan and in parts of Darfur, the two regions of South Kordofan and Blue Nile, and in the east of the country. But we saw troop numbers of the numbers that we had never really seen in Khartoum leading up to the conflict. We knew that the framework agreement, which was a political agreement after the coup in 2021 that was signed just a few months before the war, was in part going to lead to the war itself. It elevated the status of the Rapid Support Forces Commander General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, or Hemeti, to a status similar to the head of the armed forces, General Burhan. And that is something that Burhan and his followers were not going to stand idly by and allow to happen. And we saw the change in the language of the people, the commanders within Sudanese armed forces and the Islamist groups that support the Sudanese armed forces. We saw the rise in the intensity of the bellicose language, the warmongering language that they were using in the run-up to the war. And of course, the most important indicator really came days before the war broke out, which is that the final agreement, which diplomats, particularly from Western countries, the US, the UK, Norway, France, Germany, etc., was so convinced would be signed, was not signed at all. And we kept hearing of delayed deadlines being extended and extended, I think, about three times. And at that point, it became clear that the Sudanese armed forces was not interested in signing the agreement, and that the Rapid Support Forces was becoming increasingly less patient with giving them time to sign it. Of course, just even 72 hours before war broke out on that Saturday morning on the 15th, we saw the Rapid Support Forces effectively take over the Sudanese armed forces military base of the country. And at that point, I think it dawned on many of us that it was a point of no return. But many in the diplomatic community that had pushed for the framework agreement were still confident that they could persuade, particularly General Burhan, to sign up to a final agreement and put in place a new transitional government. I think, honestly, it was a case of blind faith in their efforts that led them to not really see the danger signs on the road to this war. And there's a sort of an echo chamber that diplomats in Khartoum are guilty of fomenting Which is that they speak to a small number of people, many of whom have an interest, a vested interest in a particular outcome. And so they were unable or perhaps unwilling to heed some of the warning signs in the run-up to the war.
If there is any light at the end of this tunnel, however long the tunnel is, where will this light come from?
Light will come from the, I think, indefatigable spirit of the Sudanese revolution, which we can see still coming out in myriad ways. For example, we see that people who have been forced to leave their homes and forced to be displaced in several places are still active. They're still, documenting abuses. They're still trying to organize. They're still trying to put forward political ideas and political visions, whether they are displaced within the country or displaced in the near abroad, such as Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, Egypt, or Chad. And we see within those places, you know, this will to weave back the social fabric of Sudan that has been ripped apart by this war within the country. And more importantly, we have seen the emergence of the emergency response rooms, which are volunteer-led mutual aid groups that work tirelessly and oftentimes with very little security. And, you know, while these volunteers are themselves traumatized and hungry, they are using whatever they have at their disposal in order to help families through soup kitchens, safe passages, and to support sort of learning, particularly for young children, 19 million of whom are out of school. And I think that community spirit is really what's going to be the enduring hope in terms of keeping this country called Sudan. And ensure that it has any kind of future, because otherwise it's a very, very bleak picture.